The Art of Not Dying is about more than one man's struggle against a sneak attack from an insidious foe. It's about living, finding and creating the things, situations, and relationships that sustain you, doing the things that make your life meaningful. None of us know how long we have. We all die. But we're not there yet, so live. Appreciate every moment. Be who you really are. Make your dreams a reality. Take care of yourself. Take care of your people. Try to leave everything a little bit better than you found it. Love intensely and fiercely. Exercise radical kindness. Take no shit and give none either. Fight against evil in the world, starting first and foremost within yourself. Create light in the endless darkness. Find the art in every single thing. Elevate everything you do to an art form. Live courageously, unapologetically, and remember that so much of what we do seems thankless because we forget to say thanks. And when the cynical say to you, "How can you have hope when the world is so fucked?" Tell them, because if I don't, the world will still be fucked, but there will be no hope. So fight like your life depended on it, because it does. Welcome to the Resurrection Road.
Welcome to The Art of Not Dying, podcast number one. I am your host, Craig Spector, and with me is my co-host, Michael Osborne.
Hello, hello.
Ta-da, here we are. After much ado and a lot of attempts with a lot of audio problems, we're finally here and we're live on podcast. So, hi, everybody. Glad to have you aboard. So, Michael, how's your day been?
It's actually incredible. You know, out here in Ventura, it's just another perfect day. And it's cold for us. It's down to about 65. So
That kind of matches here right about now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, but it's great. It's great. How about you?
Yeah, we have been getting a little on the winter side for this area, but then it decided to fling a couple of 75-degree days at us, and then now it's kind of settling back down. I think we're about East Coast, West Coast parity at this point. Mm-hmm. You are. We'll keep going further colder, and you'll stay the same.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It will never rain here.
Yeah.
We've given up.
Yeah. So anyway, Michael, you want to take the lead with us a little bit on what it is that we do here?
Well, yeah. The today I'd like to talk about, Memorial Day weekend. And the big surprise that was, and then go into a little bit, and then some of the music. So the Art of Not Dying is going to be basically it's the tale of what you're going through and what you discovered over that weekend and how it impacted your life. And then there's quite a bit of creativity involved too, which is your music, which I think we should go into and talk about it a little bit, and then maybe wind up the show with playing whatever you pick from how many songs is it now? 11 or 12?
God, I think it's like 11 tracks.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, why don't you take us back to Memorial Day weekend 2016?
That was kind of the day that appears to have changed my life from this point out. Basically the 60-second drive-by, throughout the month of May of 2016, I thought I had a pinched nerve in my back, and that's something I've had periodically at that point in my back for decades. So I did what I usually did. I went to the chiropractor, actually started going to a new chiropractor, got fresh x-rays, and they're doing their adjustments, and it's not working. It's not getting better. In fact, it was getting worse. And then I noticed at the same time, in the last 2 weeks of May, clocking up to Memorial Day, my legs were starting to get kind of weak and wobbly. And I felt like I didn't have a center of gravity anymore. I was getting very unsteady. And I was in a fair amount of pain. And I was taking a lot of Aleve and Domes pills and any over-the-counter thing that you could get your hands on to try to alleviate this. And it wasn't working. And it just kept getting worse. And by the Thursday before Memorial Day weekend, I'd actually gone, I'd been in a Walgreens and I got a cane, you know, and now I'm kind of crutching around on a cane and feeling like I'm about 1.5 million years old and wondering what the hell's going on with this. Then it got progressively worse over Memorial Day weekend. And then Monday, Memorial Day, I woke up and I stood up and I fell over because my legs had stopped working. And they just, I mean, I could feel my legs. I was telling my legs what to do. I'm telling them to go ahead and leg already. And they're just not, you know, they're like, we'll get right on that. And then they don't know how. And it was a really strange experience when you tell a part of your body to do something and it's just like, I'm trying, but I don't know how to do that no more. It was pretty scary. And so, I mean, all I could really do, I mean, I couldn't stand, I couldn't get up on my knees. I couldn't even crawl. All I could do was, kind of flip over and butt scooch up against the bed. Fortunately, my cell phone was within reach and I dialed 911 and ambulance came, promptly took me to the emergency room at Centara Lee here in Virginia Beach. I spent the next 11 hours in ER. They did x-rays. They did an emergency MRI. They put me on painkillers immediately because I was scoring an 8 on a pain 10 scale. And then they also did an emergency prostate exam. And they came back and they said, well, the pinched nerve in your back is actually a tumor on the T7 vertebrae of your spine. And oh, by the way, your prostate's enlarged and your PSAs are 481.
Wow.
And normal PSA range is what, 1 to 5? I think 481 rates at you're still here.
Yeah.
And so 11 hours in ER, and then about 10:30 at night, they medical transported me to Centara Norfolk General in Norfolk, Virginia, because they have neurosurgeons. And so I went ER to ER, and I was there because they didn't have a bed for me for a couple of hours. And it was about 1:30 in the morning. They got me up into 6th floor trauma ward, where I spent the next 12 days. And so that was my Monday, Memorial Day, 2016. That following Saturday, I had emergency spinal surgery to get the tumor off of my spine because it turns out that the tumor had bored its way through the bone of my vertebrae until it reached the nice juicy core of my spinal cord. And then it started squeezing, and it squeezed my spinal cord by a factor of about 50%, which was right about the time that my legs went out from under me. And it's basically the entire electrical grid from the hips down just went kablooey. And so, yeah, that was fun. And then in the meantime, they're hitting me with all these tests. I mean, if you've ever been in the hospital or in the trauma ward, I mean, it's pretty much 24/7. Somebody's coming in every 2 to 3 hours to either take something out of you, put something into you, or both. And it just never stops, you know. And it's like, and then in the morning, about 5 in the morning, you start getting the rounds of like doctors showing up at your door that you've never seen before, you know, or the doctor coming in with the entire posse of EVMS, Eastern Virginia Medical School students, you know, all just kind of looking at me like I'm some sort of a lab specimen. And it was, it was like, well, this is an adventure. And in the meantime, I've got doctors coming in and they're saying, well, you know, well, we think that it's, we think that you have, the reason why you're here, the reason why you have a tumor is that, it looks like you have stage 4 prostate cancer metastasized to your bones. And that's what I found out Tuesday morning, June 1st. And yet at the same time, it was like, well, do we know? And well, yeah, and the doctor's like, well, it's a lot of red flags. I'm like, yeah, red flags. Do you have a checkered flag? I mean, do we know that the spinal tumor was caused by the prostate? And they said, we're not sure, but because they wanted to put me on this therapy, this this lifelong sort of ADT therapy, this hormone therapy that I'm now on. But they wanted to put it on right away, and I'm like, not until I've talked with my neurosurgeon. Not until I've had the surgery, and not until my wife gets here. Because Tess was up in Canada, and when I called her on Monday morning, and then she's got to scramble and put everything on hold and get a flight and, you know, time off from work.
Right.
And she didn't get there Thursday, and I was in there Monday. And so, you know, I'm telling these two well-meaning doctors who are pitching me like used car salesmen at this point to start this injection. You know, and I'm like, unless you're telling me I'm going to die in the next 24 hours, I'm waiting until after the surgery on Saturday. And also, I'm waiting until my wife gets here, because if you think I'm going to make a life-changing medical decision without the benefit of being able to talk to my wife, you're high. It's like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, you know, Tess did get in on that Thursday. And, you know, we discussed everything. And then I had the surgery on Saturday, which was successful. I mean, when I was first talking to my my neurosurgeon, Dr. Zhu, the question I asked him was like, doctor, am I going to walk out of this hospital? Kind of like, am I ever going to walk again? And he's like, oh yeah, you'll walk, you know? And I did, 12 days later, on my own rickety 2 feet with a walker, I did walk out of there. But the morning after the surgery, a physical therapist came up to the trauma ward, and I stood up and I took 400 steps the morning after surgery. Did a two figure eights around the trauma ward. So, and it's been, and those were my first steps on the resurrection road.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Hence this show.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's one quick question about that yeah, surgery. Yeah. It kind of boggles my mind that they go in and they cut part of your spine out, and then they put you on, they get you walking around like right afterwards.
It's an amazing economy of surgery in that side, because actually the incision is only about an inch and a half long, if even, you know. And what he did is he went in there, and he cut away the portion of the tumor that was directly on the spinal cord, squeezing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of it, he sectioned it for, you know, next up in our program, which was intensive radiation, where I went in 9 days after I was released. I went in for 2 weeks of Monday through Friday, of essentially firebombing my spine, laying on this machine that looks like something out of a Star Trek movie. And it just strafes this very, very specific area on my spine. And then because of a bone scan, I found out I have a few other bone spots where, you know, my errant prostate was sending out its little evangelical minions to try to set up camp. And so I had one on my sternum, one on my clavicle, one on my rib, three on my lower spine. And so this radiation was going in and nuking all of these spots. So, yeah, I mean, my surgeon just got it off, got the pressure off my spinal cord, and then my spinal cord was like, okay, let's get back to work. We got a lot of work to do. At one point he told me, he's like, the spine is an amazing thing. It's like, but the spinal cord, it doesn't want anybody in there. It doesn't want tumors in there. It doesn't want doctors in there. it just wants to be left alone. Mm-hmm. And if you leave it alone, you know, it'll correct itself, which is pretty much what's been going on ever since June. I mean, learning how to walk again, how to stand again, all this kind of stuff. It's been a little bit of an adventure here on the resurrection road. So,
yeah, absolutely. And your team of doctors, they've got you. So you had surgery, you had the radiation, and then
yeah.
What are they planning going forward? Are they?
This is interesting, because, you know, I was a I'm a self-employed individual, and like many self-employed individuals in America, home of the greatest healthcare system in the world, I didn't have any insurance. You know, my Writers Guild coverage was there, but it had lapsed, and I had tried buying private insurance, but that was basically like, you know, they give you a shiny brochure of all the stuff you're going to get for the money you're paying. And then every time you go to the doctor, they deny the claim.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, and then I found out that that was a matter of policy for at least the first year of my policy to protect against fraud. Mm-hmm. So basically the idea was I give them real money and they give me a shiny brochure. That's the extent of the actual health care I get for my real money.
Mm-hmm.
And then Obamacare came along, and now I get a shiny exemption number. So that hasn't really helped me in any way, shape, or form. So I dropped into the hospital. I'm like, guys, I don't have any insurance. And somehow it was a lot of good luck and maybe some good karma. I kind of rolled out of there with a Cadillac medical team. I mean, my doctors are amazing. And I got like, I've got urology, I've got radiological oncology, I've got an oncologist, I've got a neurosurgeon, I've got a primary care physician, and they're all good. I have to give props where props is due. My experience of the Sentara health system here in Virginia, in the Norfolk, Virginia Beach, Tidewater area, they're fantastic. I mean, from top to bottom, I mean, everybody, the nurses, all the caregivers up and down the chain, down to the people who bring the food every day. I mean, everybody was just great. They couldn't have been nicer, more professional people. So that's been a help in all this. But yeah, my doctors had me on after the surgery. 9 days later, I had 2 weeks of radiation. I started the next morning after surgery. The two earnest doctors who wanted to hit me with this ADT therapy showed up bright and early. And they're like, so what do you think? And I just lifted up my gown. I'm like, hit me, you know, and they just shoved the, you know, gave me the abdominal injection. And so, okay, I am 0T now. I have no testosterone, which means I can have mood swings and hot flashes, just like the rest of the girls. It's great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I told my wife, it's like, you know, I can have mood swings too now. So, you know, let's have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So there.
In September, I started an 18-week chemotherapy regimen that has been kind of interesting. But once every 3 weeks for 18 weeks, starting in September. And other than that, you know, you just fight the fight every day. It's interesting because, Michael, you actually had, as we were ramping up to this, you had kind of a cancer scare, did you not?
I did. And it was quite bizarre. Nowhere near the level of what you've had to go through, but scared the shit out of me. So I was actually at the...
It's like a routine doctor, and all of a sudden they see something, and they're like, what's that? And all of a sudden you're a lab rat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a regular checkup that, you know, you just go to for, you know, I have other issues. I have a problem with my leg and, you know, medication for that, but for blood clots. But I go in every 3 to 6 months just for a follow-up, and they make sure, you know, get blood tests and make sure all the medications are working correctly. So anyway, I go in, this is a couple of months ago, I go in and making the chit chat with my doctor, and everything's good. How do you feel? It's great. Okay. Yeah. Anything at all you want to, that concerns you or you want to talk about? I go, oh yeah, hey, there's this thing on my arm. And she goes, oh, okay. Let me see. And I pull up my shirt sleeve, and I had these two really big red spots on my bicep, my left bicep. And she sits and looks at it and kind of blinks and then goes, excuse me just a moment. And exits the room, which is not really ideal when you show something to a doctor. You're like, what the fuck? That's never happened before. And then she comes back in, kind of like you said, with the parade of doctors, and they look at it and they discuss, and they're, you know, like I'm not there, but they're kind of brainstorming right there in front of me. It could be this. No, it could be that. And then I hear things like lymphoma, melanoma, all the omas. I hear a lot of omas.
Omas are going through, yeah.
And they go, okay, hold on. And they all go out together and talk, and then I'll come back in. And I was really starting to get that sphincter feeling, you know. When you get cold and your sphincter goes, I'm out of here. It's like, beep.
finger is tracting in her respiratory system.
Yeah, I got that cold feeling, and they go, okay, what we want to do is just have you lay down right here. We want to do a biopsy right now. They called it a slice biopsy or something. And they go, are you okay with that? And I go, well.
Fabulous, yeah.
No, doc, you know what? I don't want a biopsy. I think I'd rather just think about this. But so they had me lay down, came in with all the cutting tools and whatnot, and cut off a slice, and said they were going to have it, you know, analyzed, sent it to the lab, pathology and all that. And that was it for right then. This all happened in a span of about 20 minutes. I mean, it just went, just out of nowhere, boom. And,
And then the fun part, which is waiting for the lab results.
Yeah. So my doctor, coincidentally, was leaving that afternoon for Europe. She had a vacation planned, but everything was set up. She said, don't worry about it. We've got people here. You know, it's a team of doctors. It's a great facility. But it's the Academic Family Medical Center out here in Ventura at the county facility. And so, so I went, okay. And it was the type of thing where it bothered me and I was afraid. But since I had been talking to you and I'd known what you had been going through, it really kind of went, it really kind of drilled right into the center of my brain and sat there. And I could not think of anything else.
You kind of had a little bit of a meltdown there for a couple of days, didn't you?
I did. I totally flipped out. Yeah, it freaked me out. And I'm also a hypochondriac.
So, oh, great. Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah. So hypochondria, I think I have that, you know.
Yeah. So, you got the extra crispy hypochondria.
Yeah.
And you know what's so weird about it is that, you know, comparatively, it's when I compare what you went through to what I went through and what I'm going through, is I realized when you told me that, it's like, I didn't have time to be scared. Yeah. There was no downtime. You know, and I think downtime when you're waiting with the big question mark hanging over you is like, you know, that's where a lot of that stuff takes root and just festers. For me, it was just kind of like I was dropped head first into the middle of a firefight. But I still had the same kind of waiting period similar to yours because, you know, I mean, how long did it take you until you got your lab results back?
Well, unfortunately, the team that she had in place was very disorganized. And so, you know, I went through that weekend, the Saturday and Sunday. It was kind of, you know, I was anxiety ridden, but I wasn't. Well, I was pretty nervous. But what got me through is I went, okay, Monday, I'm sure they're going to call me. They're going to call me Monday.
Yeah, of course they will.
And so Monday came and went. And then Tuesday. And I think I called you and Tess, and I was really stressed out. I was like, I don't know what's happening. They're, you know, and I was really flipped out. And you guys helped talk me down off the ceiling there. But it actually ended up taking. I didn't hear back until the following week, and it was just a snafu.
Oh my God.
But the following Monday, that would be 10 days out from the biopsy. I just started calling all day and to the service and finally got somebody to call back on Wednesday or Thursday. And it was something very rare, something that has no cure, but if they watch it, it's not going to turn into something horrible. It's called a cutaneous lymphatic microplasia. Which is just this growth of it's actually an autoimmune disease that is related in some way to lymphoma, and it has something to do with white blood cells and so forth. But just in the past couple of weeks, they've prescribed to me some kind of topical steroid, which has completely reduced the two. Growing bumps. That was the other thing. After the biopsy, the thing like doubled in size.
After
they, you know, and I looked, of course, you know, WebMD is great if you're a hypochondriac.
Yeah, or if you're paranoid hypochondriac, what a great way to talk you onto the ledge.
Exactly. I went to WebMD.
To be convinced you're about to die.
Exactly. A great big list of things that it could be if you get a biopsy and it suddenly grows and changes shape. So
Yeah.
But you know, and to touch on your point about having great doctors, you know, there's something to be said about, you know, even though in America, you really, if you're not rich and you don't have insurance, there's this fear that you're left out in the cold, and you are kind of, but occasionally you'll find yourself in a situation where, there is just phenomenal care. I mean, the level of technology they have now is incredible. Like you were talking about that Star Wars, or Star Trek, radiation device, gamma knife or whatever it is. Yeah, it's incredible.
And, you know, timeline-wise, when I'm comparing your lab times to mine, they about clock the same because, you know, like I said, I was 12 days in trauma, and on day 4 I had the surgery, you know, and then I'm in there for another week, and it wasn't until they were – it was the day I was being discharged, actually, they come in, you know, they tell me I'm being discharged, and so they're doing all the paperwork and everything. Tess and I are just kind of hanging out, you know, in the room and ultimately going outside to get some air and coming back in. And then, you know, we're outside, we get a call, Dr. Boggs, who just rocks, and she's my primary care physician now. She was upstairs to go over the discharge, and so we go up there and come in, and she's there, and she greets us, and she's going through the discharge papers and everything. And she's like, oh, and in answer to your big mystery question, the answer is yes. And the big mystery question, of course, was, is the spinal tumor related to the prostate cancer? Mm-hmm. And we did not know. It was 12 days. It took me 12 days to get a solid answer to that question. And by that time, I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, it's already been emotionally processed, you know, on a sliding scale of, well, could be good news, could be awful news, or it could be something in between. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of rolled out of there. But then I was free of the, I don't know, the vacuum in which you can project all of your wonderful WebMD, you know, mm-hmm. nightmare fantasies. yeah. I was just confronted with, okay, here's the fight. Which brought it to, with me, just me being me, one of the things I instantly started doing, literally in the ambulance, on the way to Centauri Lee when they first picked me up, was I set all my Facebook settings to public, and you know, I pulled out my phone and I started taking pictures. And I'm not really sure why, except that there's something, you know, I'm a creative, you know, I'm an artist, I'm a musician, I'm a writer, I'm all these things, but you know, art is constantly converting itself life is constantly converting itself into art. And then art is trying to, you know, convert itself back into life. And so I was just logging what was happening. And I also, because Tess was so far away, I did not want her to feel alone mm-hmm. in all this. She was trying to get down here. And then in the course of that, you know, over the couple of days before she got there, you know, I was in the hospital. My sister was there, you know, helping out a lot, you know, in Tess's absence. But I started this thing. It was just born called The Art of Not Dying. And it was this really strange kind of real-time meta project. Like, I don't know exactly what shape this is taking so far, but it's taking a shape. And so that has continued onward through all this. I mean, a lot of it's like journaling and photo journaling. I have a Facebook page called The Art of Not Dying, Tales of Recovery on the Resurrection Road, where I've been sort of dumping all this stuff since June. And I have a GoFundMe account set up, which has been way, way successful with people who have responded, and a lot of love and support and care that has come onto that. Yes. So I'm really thankful for all of that. And that's made it a lot easier, too, because essentially I was working as I had a day gig as a medical and legal courier for the last couple of years, right up until I landed in Norfolk General. And part of that came in handy because Norfolk General is a huge complex with these labyrinthine halls, like something out of a Stanley Kubrick movie. It's really easy to get lost in there. I was in and out of there 20 times a week when I was doing medical courier stuff. And so I knew the halls already. I'd never seen them from a gurney, but I kind of knew my way around, and that helped demystify it a little bit and make it a little less scary. And also then when all my doctors are like, you know, wanting me for follow-ups, and I'm like, well, where are you located? It's like, oh, we're over here. I'm like, oh, yeah, I know where you are. I deliver cancer vaccines to your facility all the time from the airport. You know, and so I was already plugged in to this whole network. I knew where everybody's offices were. And now I'm coming into all of them as a patient, and it's just kind of ironic. But the art of not dying has turned into a lot of different things. You know, it's the live journaling thing. I think inevitably a book is coming out of this. I'm not sure what shape it's taking right now. And then there's the music. This really kind of one of the things my sister had asked me when I first was in the hospital. She's like, "Do you need anything from the apartment?" And I'm like, "Yeah, bring this, bring that, bring that, and bring my guitar." And I specifically wanted my little red Ibanez acoustic that the Tess had gotten me as a birthday present in 2014. And so my sister brought that in. And so while I was there, I would play my guitar, and it literally would lower my blood pressure, you know, uh-huh. and lower my heart rate and just kind of chill me out. And the morning of the surgery, I actually took a picture because I am notably shameless. but they're prepping me for surgery. So, you know, I'm butt ass naked sitting on the bed, and you know, the nurses, and they're prepping me, and Tess is helping to prep me, and Tess is actually about to give me this like chemical sponge bath that they have to put you on before you go into surgery. And so I'm sitting there butt ass naked on the bed with the guitar playing a song that I started writing called Hospital Song, that was just this little progression that I'd play that would calm me down. And that just kind of carried over since I was released. I got home, got into my home studio, and I started working on music. And I'm like 11 tracks into a new album called, surprisingly enough, The Resurrection Road. Mm-hmm. And it's just a lot of songs that kind of flow out of this. And that also kind of brings us to the point of like, what is the art of not dying? It's more than just, you know, a couple of middle-aged guys bitching about, you know, what happens when you get older. you know, it really is because this entire experience has caused me to reevaluate what it is that makes life worthwhile and important and worth fighting for. And I've been applying that to my own life. And I've just been sharing that fairly openly with people along the way. And I've heard a lot from my 3,000 some odd Facebook fans and friends. I've gotten a lot of private messages from people who are saying it's helping them in their mm-hmm. struggle. You know, because everybody has either, if you haven't had something like this happen to you, you love somebody that something like this happened to. Mm-hmm. And so it really is kind of this is all about, you know, not just, you know, one man fighting a pernicious disease, but, you know, what is it that makes life worthwhile? And so in this show, as we continue on in upcoming episodes, we're going to be talking about, you know, it's not just what have you been through, but what are you doing? We have, you know, we got a number of fun and exciting guests who said that they'd love to be on the show in weeks to come. A lot of creatives, a lot of, you know, writers, artists, filmmakers, musicians, regular folk. It's just kind of like, well, you know, come on in. And, you know, we accept all good mojo, and we like to hope that we can put some out while we're at it.
Mm-hmm. And if we're not careful, we might have fun, you know.
Yeah, so, and that sucks.
Yeah. So, and yeah, there's a lot coming out of this, and the creativity aspect is one thing that I get to witness seeing you do it. And by the way, I mean, that music, very prolific, you know. I seen the new playlist. I mean, it's amazing. And I play some of the stuff for my kids. played Resurrection Road for Tracy last week, and she just, my girlfriend Tracy, and she just loved it. It was very moving. Cool. And yeah. So it's, there's a, for something that is so bad, I'm amazed at how much great stuff is coming out of it. And a lot of appreciation for, you know, your music and you know, I already liked your writing, but but you know, you're a horror writer, and Tracy's not into that, so she's never read one of your books.
Neither is Tess, really. You know, yeah. We're married to civilians.
Yeah. So, you know, I already dig your stuff, and it's exciting to see that. I've never gotten to see or experience that creative, the behind the scenes creative process. You know, when I talk to you about what you're thinking and about what the project is going to be and as it develops and evolves, and some of the people that you've talked to who want to come on the show who are also really talented people that I don't know, but I've heard of and I'm very familiar with some of them. And I think it's just fascinating. It's a lot of very powerful, good, inspirational things coming out of something that's really kind of bad and terrifying on the surface.
Yeah, you would think that this would be nothing but suck.
Yeah.
And there is a goodly portion of suck that comes with it. But
there's a hefty help.
Yeah. But it's not all bad. And really, a lot of it, and you know, even the doctors in the hospital and everything, and subsequently were telling me, particularly with cancer, your attitude has a lot to do with how it goes. Everybody's cancer is individual. Cancer is a very custom fit in an off the rack world. There's no two cancers that are exactly quite the same, and like my cancer is diagnosed as it's high risk and high volume according to my oncologist, and it rates 8 on a 10 scale of aggressiveness. Mm-hmm. As it happens, I rate 11 on a 10 scale of go fuck yourself. So I right from the get go, it was kind of like my reaction to this was just like, okay, I hear a lot about cancer victims and cancer survivors, and that's, I mean, great when you hear people, you know, fighting this disease. But I don't feel like either one. I don't feel like a victim, and I don't feel like a survivor. I'm a fighter. I'm a warrior by nature. I'm pugnacious and stubborn. And you know, I just figure, my little errant uppity organ is down there, you know, and, I don't know, maybe it's a cry for help. Maybe it's a suicide thing, and it's just, I'm collateral damage, you know? but any way around it, you know, it pulled its coup. It managed to get stages 1 through 3 under radar with nobody noticing. And I guess it had talked, my prostate had talked itself into world domination. But now we know about it. And, you know, there are more good cells in me than bad cells. Mm-hmm. And so the fight is on. You know, and I was talking to somebody the other day, and they're like, well, I mean, I guess you could do surgery, but that's brutal. You know, and I'm like, no, we're not going to take it out. No. We're just going to, like, put out the dumpster fire. And, you know, put it into the exile, and they can think about what it's done.
Yeah.
You know, because...
It can mull it over for the rest of our life.
It'll, you know, it's going to get some, you know, it's going to get a timeout, really. because there is no... as I understand it, there is... I don't get a cure, obviously, but I don't get remission. I don't get any cancer-free days. For me, I will be dancing with this for the rest of my days.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be managed. And the technology and the science and is really fairly well developed at this point in terms of managing prostate cancer. And so kind of my mission at hand is to manage the fucking shit out of this and just get it under control and keep it under control and take it from there. You know, it has inspired, you know, a tremendous reevaluation of everything, top to bottom in my life. It has, like, you know, you talk about a couple minutes ago, it's like it hasn't been an entirely negative experience. That's what's so trippy about it. I mean, Tessenite has brought us a lot closer together. There have been moments of genuine humor, a lot of it of the dark kind, but I mean, some of the stuff is just fucking funny. And you just roll with it, you know? You take the pain, you take your little victories when you have them, and every day is another day in the bonus round, you know?
And I got to say, you know, your attitude is just mind blowing. I think it's just fantastic. And you knowing me and what I had with my scare, I'm not sure I could be where you're at. You know,
I felt bad for you when you had your scare because part of it was like, oh shit, that sucks so bad. And there was this other part of me that was like, welcome to the party, pal. It's like, you know. Like the Sam Kinison in my head. Just
like, right. Yeah, I know, but yeah, that for me, I would definitely probably it might take me a while to get to the point where you are. So, and like when you said, a lot of your fans and other people and friends who you said that they have contacted you and they're being helped through the process and by being on the journey with you, I think helps.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember, I personally did have a couple of friends who have passed away, not from prostate cancer, but who went through a process and it really affected me and there's a lot of mystery about it. And most people, like these two people, they didn't say anything until it was almost over.
Yikes.
Yeah. You know, so not only for me, but other friends of theirs, I think it's very interesting because when something like that happens, you always look back and go, God, if I, you know, I don't know what I could have done, but man, I wish I could have done something.
I had known.
Yeah. And then what they're going through is mysterious if you're not going through it too. And what I've learned a lot just talking with you throughout this, learned a lot about just like you said, managing it. You know, you're managing a lot of things. You had the surgery, you had the radiation, the chemo, and you're being victorious with all of them. But you're also managing in a way that is incredible. You're managing fear. You're not sending control of your own life over to the disease, you know, and let it manage you.
Yeah.
You're managing the fuck out of it. So
it's a very fear, no fear sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's incredible.
So, and it's like, I'm just being me. I'm doing the best I can with all this. And there's a lot of pay it back and pay it forward in all of this. I have friends too who have passed in the last couple of years, and I have one friend who's been an old friend since he was my sound man with the band back in high school. You know, shout out Dino Ramble, who's been fighting prostate cancer for the last 6 years, and that's part of his, I guess, good almost 10 years before that of the fight with cancer, and he's still in there kicking.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like you fight until it's done. You know. And so that's, and appreciate everything along the way, appreciate every single little victory that you have and appreciate everyone along the way. Like I said before, I mean, my doctors have been fantastic. Dr. Zhu, Dr. Kelly, Dr. Boggs, Dr. Fleming, they've all just been amazing. And, my friends and Facebook friends, have been fantastic. The GoFundMe is still out there. If anybody feels like kicking anything toward it, that would help because like I said, I was a medical career when this happened and I got fired because I was sick. So, there have been some people who are assholes along the way. Cardinal Messengers, Carl, you suck as a human being.
We all know it now, Carl.
But you're not worth spending any more time with. You're just a dick. And so, you know, I'm basically early semi-retired off of all this, which is kind of an odd surprise. So, you know, the GoFundMe is like every little bit helps. And it takes.
Do you want to give that information, or how do people get to that?
The easiest way to get to it is you can go to GoFundMe.com and look for Spartacus Fights Cancer, because I became Spartacus during all of this. And you can also just come to Facebook and go to the Art of Not Dying Facebook page, and that'll give you links to everything, because that's kind of the central clearinghouse for all of this. There's been just a lot of – my family's been great. Everybody's been great. Little rescue dog's been great. Lacey, the rescue pup, has been mm-hmm. You appreciate everything, because it's all a gift. I mean, I'm still here. I'm still ticking. You know, and I'm not done yet. Fight the fight and enjoy the ride on the resurrection road.
Absolutely. Well, we've been on now for a good
about 45 minutes. Yeah.
So
45 minutes of a 30-minute show. Hey.
What do you want to pick? Yeah. All right. Yeah. What do you want to pick? Because I think we're going to play a piece of your music on the way out of each of these shows. Yeah. What do you pick today?
I think that we should go ahead and roll out with the title song, Resurrection Road, from my upcoming ECD, Craig Spector, Resurrection Road, that will soon be available on an internet near you.
And before we get to that, guess what I want to talk about?
What do you want to talk about?
Audible.com.
Audible.com.
It's this place where you can get audiobooks. You know, people don't have time. You don't have time now to read all – not everybody, but a lot of people commute. You can listen to a book while you're commuting, while you're doing other things. It's a great service. I'm actually a customer of them, but we've got an affiliate marketing sponsorship program for you.
Ta-da.
Which actually – did you decide on an address?
We got a bunch of them. We've got Resurrection Road, Craig Spector, Craig Specs, S-P-E-X. Which one do we want to pick?
I think we'll do audible.com/Resurrection Road, I think. And then that'll be on your Facebook page as well.
Yeah.
If people want to get to it. But the great deal we've got worked out is you can go and sign up for this audible.com and get a free audiobook of your choice out of the thousands that they have. I would recommend one of yours right now, and I think every week we should probably have it set that you can pick out one, but I'll pick one unless you have a pick.
Any one of my books is great, because my books, most all of my books with rare exception, are on in ebook available on Audible from the amazing crossroadpress.com. Which has been doing all of my ebooks, and I'm pretty. They sell them through the Audible chain.
Yeah.
So,
and the ones I have, I actually have. I have The Light at the End.
The one that started it all.
Yeah, and he's a great. And if you don't have that, or you haven't read the book or know the story, it's a great, great vampire. Gritty vampire story that's absolutely great. So I'm going to recommend that one this week.
If you The Light at the End is in its 35th year. It's the one that started everything. It's a punk vampire in the subways of 1980s Manhattan. And it was so Josh Whedon from Buffy the Vampire Slayer liked it so much that he stole the main character, the bad guy, and created Spike in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right.
And he admits it. He's proud of it. You know?
Yeah.
I'm happy he liked it so much, but sometimes I wish he'd just send me a check.
Right. Where's the check?
The Light and Crossword Press did an absolutely fantastic edition of the book. And I believe the Audible version, the audiobook, is actually narrated, if I'm not mistaken, it's narrated by horror author Chet Williamson.
I think it is.
So there you go, kids. You can't go wrong with that.
Yeah. And if you go to audible.com/resurrectionroad or /resurrectionroad and sign up for a free trial, you'll get that audiobook, The Light at the End, or whatever you choose for free. You try it out, try the service out. If you don't like it, you just cancel it. You don't pay for anything. Free. Gratis. So I encourage everybody to go out and do that. Take advantage of the free trial. And Craig gets a little bit of a kicker.
I got a cut of the action.
Yeah. Yeah. And it will help on this battle, this so far successful battle. And you get to listen to a great book. And there's other ones too. You have a bunch of them on there. But
We'll be pimping those in weeks to come.
Absolutely.
So I guess we're at 49 minutes.
Let's do this. Let's hear Resurrection Road by Craig Spector.
Okay, kids. Thanks a lot, and thanks for tuning in. And tune back in next week.
See you soon.
A story I could tell ya that requires no explanation. When you're on the road to hell or some other destination, no modesty or pride, no shame or consternation. Embrace the bloody ride and abandon expectation. Gotta walk before you run, gotta crawl before you stand. On the resurrection road, you could use a helping hand. Gotta walk before you run, gotta crawl before you stand. On the resurrection road, we all need a helping hand. When all of this has crumbled and your dreams all swept away, when everything's a struggle just to live another day, when the sickness that's inside you makes you think you're gonna die, you can lay down, you can stay down, you can get up, you can fight. Gotta sink before you rise, gonna fall before you fly. On the resurrection road, there just ain't no place to hide. Gotta walk before you run, gotta crawl before you stand. On the resurrection road, we all need a helping hand. Sometimes you're gonna stumble, sometimes you're gonna fall. Your mileage may be varied, but it happens to us all. So hang on to your hat and hold on to your soul. You might lose a lot of things, but don't you lose control. Gotta hurt before you heal, gotta live until you die. On the resurrection road, there's no need to wonder why. Gotta walk before you run, gotta crawl before you stand. On the resurrection road, we all need a helping hand. So take a tip from me as you pass me in the night. The road, it might get twisted, but I think you'll be alright. The strong are gonna suffer and the weak are gonna pay. But in the end, you'll see, my friend, there's just no other way. Gotta hurt before you heal, gotta live before you die. On the resurrection road, there's no need to wonder why. Gotta walk before you run, gotta crawl before you stand. On the resurrection road, we all need a helping hand. Gotta sink before you rise, gonna fall before you fly. On the resurrection road, there just ain't no place to hide. Gotta walk before you run, gotta crawl before you stand. On the resurrection road, we all need a helping hand. On the resurrection road, we all need a helping hand. On the resurrection road, we all need a helping hand.